This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Man, what a game last night, and it's just going to roll on tonight as the semifinals continue. This is day two of five straight days of high-leverage winner-go-home football. So we got a football Friday ahead over the course of the next 2 hours right here on Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you, live as always from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. I know we're going to break down last night in its entirety, but that fourth quarter, man, a little chaotic.
It was fun. It was a really good game. Absolutely fantastic. And it looked like it was maybe going to set up to be somewhat boring. Not boring, but it was like a physical kind of paint-swapping contest to start. And that thing just absolutely erupted. So good college football game, two evenly matched teams, and now a little bit of history as Miami is going to be at home, technically, for a national championship game.
And Mario Cristobal on the podium wanted nothing to do with celebrating that win, did he? He
was all about... What was his problem? He was also getting into it with Scott Van Pelt, right?
I didn't see that part.
Yeah, like Van Pelt, I think Van Pelt made it a little bit about him, but Van Pelt was clearly setting up the U is back, and Cristobal didn't want to hear it, and so they were kind of going back and forth a little
bit. See, I turned it off after the trophy ceremony, so I didn't see the SportsCenter with SVP post-game element of it. He like all stuff, he's like, can we get these people off the podium? We need to get the players up here.
There's a little bit. Relax. You won. Let's go.
But got to go 1-0. Let's see if they can in Miami on January 19th. That said, we have a lot more to get to on the show. We will detail how that win transpired last night. Look ahead to tonight. But let's set the table like we always do. Time to run it down.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
Fortunately for us, we're going to have some help to break it all down. Coming up in 30 minutes, VSiN's own Will Hill going to join the program. He's got a ton of plays on Wild Card Weekend, as well as the Peach Bowl coming up tonight. And end of the hour, Mike Palm in studio, as he always is on a Friday.
Yeah, looking forward to getting some plays from Will. Got some shared thoughts on a couple of these postseason matchups. And, of course, Mike always brings a variety of topics that I'm looking forward to breaking down. You were filling me in on one, which I'm very much looking forward to in the NHL.
One in the NHL, some salacious rumors in the National Hockey League. I'm very curious Mike Palm's thought process on all of it. We mentioned the Peach Bowl coming up tonight, though. We will break this game down at length as Indiana and Oregon go head-to-head, a rematch from back in October at Autzen Stadium, one in which Indiana won by double digits despite closing as a touchdown or more dog, depending on where you look. This is the fourth regular season rematch in this year's college football playoff, sixth in the 12-year history of the playoff. Only one has actually swept both the regular season and the playoff matchup. That was Ole Miss against Tulane. A little bit of a different level of competition in this game.
Yeah, looking forward to what this game is. Hopefully it's a little bit more entertaining than what we saw against Alabama. Having said that, you know, maybe this team is just UConn of football, and they're just going to stomp through everybody.
Indiana laying 3.5, total 48.5. But we will kick off with breaking down what we saw last night. And as you wrote here on the rundown, a hurricane's a-coming. The U is back. Back in the national championship, first time since 2003, looking to win it for the first time since 01. And as you said, they'll play it at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami coming up in just over a week. 31-27, our final score last night in the Fiesta Bowl. And that fourth quarter, for anybody with money on it, was an absolute sweat, whether you were talking side or total in this one, because what looked like, as you mentioned, kind of like this slow-paced, hard-fought, defensive game, we had, I think it was 4 lead changes and 25 total points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different places you can start here, but I got to say, I mean, it's hard kind of not to start with Mark Fletcher Jr. I mean, the dude's been absolutely incredible through the postseason so far. Two games of over 130 yards. Last night, 133 on 22 carries, averaging 6 yards per touch there on the ground. The dude was absolutely fantastic. He has been kind of the machine for this offense. We talked about this yesterday. What was going to be one of the things? It was limp noodle versus limp noodle. The running attack for Miami versus the run defense for Ole Miss, and which of those weaknesses was going to give way. And it looked like that was Ole Miss. The Miami was controlling time of possession, keeping Ole Miss off of the field. The play discrepancy in the first half at one point was absolutely insane. And a lot of that had to do with the way that Fletcher was running the ball for them. He was incredible.
That's why I brought up the yards prop for him yesterday. Unfortunately, the yards and touchdown parlay we were talking about didn't get home, but certainly goes well over the yardage. Canes in all had 191 yards on the ground and a season high 96 before contact. So they were great in that area, where I actually thought you were going to start was the final play of the game.
You sure?
Because as somebody who laid three, I'm very happy that a pass interference call was not made in that moment. Yet, it has been a point of controversy. And what would a game that was so back and forth like be without something like that at the end of this one?
Look, I mean, you don't really call, I guess, Hail Marys in those situations. I also hate that argument. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty, and you should call it regardless. But as we heard from Golding yesterday, in those situations, you usually don't get those calls for whatever reason. And that was it. That was it yesterday. Although that was a little bit more egregious than I think usual Hail Mary pass interference.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's not like your typical jump ball and there's six people in the air trying to make sense of it. Like, that was a one-on-one matchup where you could very clearly see it.
That was grabbing the shoulder pads and riding him into the end zone and not letting him get to the ball.
That said, again, as someone who laid three, not mad at it. You mentioned Pete Golding's thought process on it. I did like the way that he handled it after the loss. Here's what he had to say on the podium.
I mean, those situations are tough to call them. I mean, those situations, but I mean, yeah, there was contact, but I mean, it happens a lot. You know, that's not why we lost the game, but, you know, we just had a lot of opportunities late, but I mean, I think it shows you the resiliency of the team. You know, I mean, they didn't care. Was it 18-15? They're going to go out there and give it all they got, and, you know, looks like you ran out of time, but we didn't execute well enough, didn't unprepare well enough, and we didn't coach good enough.
And he mentions the missed opportunities. I think third downs are going to be something they really look back on in this one. 0 for 5 on third down in the first half, 2 for 10 for the game. They had 0 yards for the game on third down, never went for it on fourth. And execution-wise, the Miami final drive where Carson Beck goes 75 yards, 15 plays, runs it in for his first rushing touchdown in a handful of, like, since week 3 against USF was the only other time that he had a rushing touchdown this season. He ends up running in the game-winning score. I think Ole Miss has a lot of things that they'll probably look back on and wonder what if after that.
Absolutely. This has been – there's a lot of different ways you can point to when you're talking about the way this transpired. But you got to say, man, we talked about this a little bit with Carson Beck yesterday too. Look, it's not overtly impressive when you look at the final box score for him on a day-to-day basis. And last night it was actually pretty solid, 23-37, 268, 7.2 per attempt, 2 touchdowns and a pick. But the leverage in which he finds himself and makes the plays that he needs to is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We talk about the throws that need to be made on certain downs, finding open lanes as a runner when the pocket opens up for him. I know that this was made a lot of. I don't think the kid would have been able to get it done, but on the final play, how about the defensive tackle for Ole Miss slipping and kind of just almost giving up on the play and allowing him to at least have a wide open path to what ultimately was the game-winning touchdown. But Beck was impressive, and you mentioned it, Stormy, the last two games for this Miami team. Yesterday, they're 11 of 19 on third downs. They were 7 of 14 on third downs against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. They have been incredible on third downs. One would assume that you can't keep that going. They're also 3 for 3 in the last two games on fourth downs, but you only need a small sample size to get it done, and maybe they can carry that through to the next game.
And yet there is still a frustration you have with Mario Cristobal at the helm.
There has to be. I mean, he almost did it yesterday. So this was a big reason why. Again, look, we still talk about Mario Cristobal, and he's done a very good job for the most part. But yesterday, you trail 19-17 with 5:10 left, and you score a touchdown to make it 23-19. There's really no question that you go for two there in that scenario. You have to. And yet, what does Mario Cristobal do? He kicks the extra point.
Well, real quickly, it's just funny because as I'm watching it, I'm like, what are they doing? Because you saw him immediately put up the one.
Yeah.
Like, there was no question in his mind that he was kicking the extra point.
No, you need the other two.
Yeah.
And so for those who don't really follow it, if you have a successful two-point attempt in that game or in that scenario, you're up 25-19. If you fail, it's 23-19. When Ole Miss then subsequently scores, if they do after that, there's one of two scenarios. You're either down 26-25 or you're down 26-23. Either way, on that final drive in which they needed a touchdown, you don't need that touchdown. You need a field goal. So one would have won it for you. One would have tied the game. Who knows what happens when you go to overtime, but the math would dictate that you go for two in that scenario, and yet he didn't. And it's interesting because I was watching his post-game presser. He was asked about the second down before they scored the touchdown in that, hey, if it's incomplete, what's your scenario? And he's like, oh, we have a staff. We work through all of the different scenarios. And I was like, but you did it for the other touchdown. Where was the staff there that didn't tell you? They didn't tell you you had to go for two? Look, they won. But those are like the little things that in certain games
make you wonder
that Mario will get you there. And he got away with it here. But what if it comes up again in the national championship game against Cignetti? Because I'll tell you what, I think Cignetti would have gone for two there. I think he knows that he would have gone for two there. And for Mario, this has been the issue for him. They got away with it. We'll see if it happens again.
You put this in the rundown, and I do think it's pretty remarkable from OptiStats. Miami, the first FBS or NFL team in a single game the last 20 years to have all of these things happen. Hold the ball for 40-plus minutes. They had it for 41-22. Ole Miss, fewer than 19 minutes of game action that they had the football. Amass 400-plus yards of offense, convert 10-plus third downs, multiple fourth downs, and have four drives of 13 or more plays. Remarkable. And yet, Ole Miss still had an opportunity to win this thing at the end of the game.
I mean,
insane.
You talk about ball control. Like, that's it right there. That is, you talk about the long drives, the ability to convert on these third downs at such a high rate, on the fourth downs to be able to do it when you needed to do it as well. And some of them with relative ease. I mean, there's like a fourth and two where they just handed off of the middle. Yeah. It's like, yep, here's 4 yards, no problem. So that was a very impressive performance by Miami. And we've talked about this a lot with this team. They are very good at the lines of scrimmage in that show. Yep. Now, there's a lot of injuries that we saw yesterday. They were going down like flies. So we'll see what exactly they look like coming up on, what is it, the 19th, 10 days from now? But still, really impressive for that team.
I was texting you so stressed. Yeah. It's like, of course this is going to happen. All their corners are out. Oh, their starting safety goes down. Okay, Akeem Mezidor, is he playing? Is he not playing? There's a lot happening. The week before the final bracket reveal, and we brought this up yesterday briefly, but just fascinating that Miami is in this point given the conversation around this team going into that bracket reveal. They were 10-1 just to make the playoff, 150-1 to win the national championship. Now they are the second shot on the board. Indiana, your favorite, +120, Miami, +180, and our 20-1 tickets still alive. We do have some hypothetical national championship odds depending on what happens in tonight's Peach Bowl. Miami getting 5.5 in the hypothetical against Indiana, 2.5 against Oregon, and how wild would that be if it was the Ducks and you have Mario Cristobal taking on his former team and replacement in Dan Lanning? Oh, all the storylines. So
good. With that.
We got to step aside. When we come back, though, we begin our deep dive into the Peach Bowl tonight. Indiana and Oregon going head to head. Stay with us.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here on Money Moves. And we're going to dive into the Peach Bowl in a moment, but did just get some breaking news quickly in the NFL ahead of Wild Card Weekend. There were a lot of questions about the status of Chargers running back Omarion Hampton going into this weekend. And despite the questionable tag, it appears like he's going to go. Chris Rhyme of ESPN, who covers the Chargers, said that Omarion himself said his plan is to play Sunday against Patriots.
Yep, so big deal there. And I feel conflicted. We'll talk a little bit more about that game with Will Hill, but do lean a little bit. Actually, not a little bit. I like the Chargers there in that game against the Patriots.
So I do too, and I'm sick about it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I need to bet it, but I'm going to regret it.
I mean, you like that with everything. You got an edge. Play it. Let's go. We got a lot. There's a lot going
on
this weekend.
I like their defense. So one of the things we were talking about was the matchup I feel like that'll be really interesting in that game is Drake May and all of the explosives. They've been so good at them in the past game specifically, but that's what the Chargers defense is best at. Mm-hmm. So instead of the limp noodle against the limp noodle, it's the
strength on strength.
Strength on strength.
That's right.
Kind of fun.
Hydrogen bomb versus hydrogen bomb.
Let's go. That said, let's get into a little college football here. The second of the two semifinals coming up tonight. Indiana laying 3.5 against Oregon. Total here 48.5. Hoosiers already beat the Ducks back in October at Autzen Stadium. 30-20 was the final. Ducks closed a 7.5 point favorite, depending on where you're looking at. That win for the Hoosiers was part of what's been a remarkable undefeated run for them. 14-0 to this point. Oregon, meanwhile, that loss is their lone blemish on the season, and they have been perfect since. So who do you think has the edge in this one?
I mean, I think it's Indiana. I played Indiana just right out the gate at -4, so it's not the best of the number as it's down to that 3.5. But I think that there's going to be something here for Indiana in terms of their ability to pressure Dante Moore again. Obviously, we know he got sacked six times the first time around. I think you saw the way that they were I shouldn't say were able to. They failed to execute against Texas Tech. You saw that up close. Texas Tech's defensive line was great against them. And while they didn't pressure Dante Moore specifically, only 25% of his 39 dropbacks he was considered pressure on by PFF, I still think that defensive line showed that a good unit up front can really stymie what Oregon wants to do for the most part on offense. And I think Indiana's got that. Even with the injury along the defensive line, as we know, this is still a group that I think can send waves of guys, is really good at their blitz packages, when they decide to blitz, when they decide not to, when they can send four guys versus extra rushers, and when they choose to do it. I like a lot of what Indiana brings to the table, and I think it starts there. I saw a really good defensive line do it against Oregon this last time around, and their offense was really the reason why they lost that game, and I think Indiana can do that again here.
The lone big injury of the game of note, Oregon running back Jordan Davison is going to be out. He's their second leading rusher on the team, but been the go-to guy in the red zone, 15 rushing touchdowns for him this year. So while that is significant, a lot of what you're saying about the pressure that Indiana brought to Dante Moore actually leads me to a running back reception prop that I think is interesting. Yes, the expectation is that Noah Whittington is going to get the bulk of the workload now that Davison is out, which was would have been the case anyways. He is their primary running back when it comes to all of the work on the ground. Deer Hill is another freshman running back that Oregon really seems to like and I think is going to get more play in this game. And I think the receiving angle could be worth a look here because his rush yards, I think, just got a little bit too aggressive with the understanding that Davison was going to be out. This thing got bet up from 31.5 to I think we're at 42.5 right now for his rush yards. The receptions number is set at 1.5. It's juiced to high heaven, minus 160 or more, depending on where you're looking at for this. But I would be shocked if he doesn't hit this, and I'd be extremely disappointed. So this is one that I'm going with tonight. He has at least two receptions, four of his last five games, one of which was against the one where he didn't hit it, was against JMU when we know that Oregon offense popped off early and didn't really have to worry about anything after that. The first game with Indiana, he was also non-existent. But going through that game, knowing the tough day that Dante Moore had, they're going to want to get the ball out quickly. And I think he's going to be the guy they use in those moments. And it's, you just need two catches.
Sure.
So I love that prop angle. I know it's minus 160. I know it's gross. Have to bet $160 to win back that 100, but I really think it's worthwhile.
If you got an edge, you got an edge. Play it. I think it make a lot of sense there when you're talking about the way you're breaking it down. So I think so. I'm going to be curious to see. There's a couple of things. You know, we talked a lot about last week explosives because one of the things that Texas Tech was very reliant on throughout their season was explosives. And you saw that. I mean, they were very hit or miss in that game against Oregon, but they did crack a couple of explosives. They got the big run on the missed tackle in the backfield that ultimately set up nothing because they didn't do anything with the drive. They got another explosive pass down the right sideline, I think, that ultimately set up their goal-to-go drive that ended in an interception. My whole point here being is that Oregon defensively, if you look at a couple of different things, they're a very good defense, but where you can look at some of the cracks in the armor, if you will, they're floating around like the 25th, 30th percentile in pass explosive play rate allowed. Indiana, they're more explosive through the air than they are on the ground, so are you going to give up some explosives in that regard too? And I think that's going to be big. The other is these late downs. Oregon on both sides, if you're talking about a weakness, it's their late down success rate both ways. On offense, they're 39th in third and fourth down success rate. Indiana defensively is 11th in defending on those downs. The other side of it, Oregon defensively, third down success rate, fourth down success rate, they're 40th in the country. Indiana's offense, they're second best in success rate on third and fourth down. That's where it sounds kind of cliche, but this is where it's ultimately going to make, I think, a big difference here. Oregon throughout the year, if they've had an issue, it's with some of the explosives they've allowed through the air. They haven't been the best on late downs on offense and on defense, and this is one of the better late down teams in the country in Indiana.
Yeah, and we talked about it coming out of the Orange Bowl, just the questions generally about Oregon and like how much of the shutout performance that they had was actually because their defense was great, or was it just Texas Tech's shortcomings? And so I kind of agree with you, and I think it was the latter. I think those were spots that Texas Tech had issues, and Oregon was able to exploit them.
Yep.
So
now, I think a lot of people do agree with you, though. I mean, I know you mentioned that I guess I planted a bug in your ear, if you will, but there's support for Oregon, obviously, because this thing opened up at 4, and we're down to 3.5. But I do think that when you talk about the line adjustment, there is a question to be had of, okay, you were laying 7 at home here. Now you're catching 3.5, 4 on a neutral. That is quite the adjustment. You do make the argument, hey, look, I think you can state that first number was incorrect. The gap between these two teams was not that large, but has enough happened over the course of their last meeting that this is ultimately the correction you get to.
Yeah, so there are extra data points, obviously, since that game back in October. But you said it. That was 100% my thought process on Friday when we first had this discussion was I feel like that 11 or so point adjustment just is a little bit too big for this Oregon team that has stepped up every time since that game to be able to win, even in close games, like whether it has been, whether they've had to win on the back of their defense or on the explosive offense or on the arm of Dante Moore, whatever it is, they just found ways to win games. And now this is the biggest game of Dan Lanning's career. How does this shake out? I just don't know. And the bug that JVT is mentioning that he put in my ear was making that UConn comp. Mm-hmm. And is Indiana just so good now that they're going to have a UConn-like run where every opponent that is in their wake, they demolish? And that's entirely possible. And that's why I couldn't get down on a side in this game. I think Indiana wins it. The 3.5, I don't know. And I got really, really stuck on this. And I blame you. That's why all I have is a third string running back reception prop because of your actions.
You should go. I mean, I'm wrong all the time.
Actually, you know what? You are wrong about this. And I'm kind of mad because I asked you yesterday, and granted, Indiana could still lose today. But I asked you yesterday off the air, it's like, should I put together a Miami-Indiana moneyline parlay? And he said, why don't you pair up Miami with the Hornets? Yeah.
Well, you wanted the Hornets.
Sure. Okay. We'll just do it tonight.
If we're talking about the anger,
workout?
If we're talking about the anger, I mean, I let myself get convinced that the Hornets could get it done.
Sick.
I talked about this with Zach on
news. And I thought that they were back too, because they were trailing most of the game last night.
And then they came back.
Did
you watch it all? Did you watch the way it ended?
No. Scoreboard watching.
It was a nightmare. LaMelo had to.
It was a nightmare scoreboard watching.
No, it was LaMelo tried to throw a lob in like clutch time and turned it over, and then on an inbounds turned it over again. Like, it was an absolute nightmare. He had to apologize after the game.
It was pretty bad. Kill me.
Last
thought on this one, Fernando Mendoza. What's kind of fun about this game, should Dante Moore declare for the draft, you have the head-to-head of the two top quarterbacks that are going to be in the 2026 draft.
We got to track this, too. So it's minus 425 now for Fernando Mendoza. Dante Moore is plus 330. By the way, I think those odds are a little skewed. I would take a piece of Dante Moore to just be the first overall pick. Because, one, I don't believe that he's not going to come out. And, two, I just don't think the gap between these two as prospects is there. But let's just see. Should Oregon pull off the victory? I'm going to be curious to see if the market moves at all, because that would be very stupid.
I'm sure it will, though, because that's what it is. Also, while we're on the topic of the draft, worth noting, Trinidad Chambliss was denied his sixth year of eligibility by the NCAA. Also, already Pete Nakos has reported that the plan is to sue the NCAA now and see how this moves forward. But should he not be able to go back to Ole Miss and he declares for the draft, he's 55-1 on the board
right now.
He already came down?
20-1 now.
Wow.
When that news came down, we had pulled it up before the show to look at where he was. And he was 55-1 before the show started. Since the news, he is 20-1.
Wowee. Remember, everybody, football meets flavor with VSiN and Omaha Steaks, the official sponsor of tailgating. As you're watching all these games, make sure you're sitting in front of the TV with some yummy, yummy, delicious, fully cooked chicken rings. Because right now, when you spend $129, you score 2 pounds of fully cooked chicken wings plus 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com/VSIN. That's omahasteaks.com/VSIN. Minimum purchase required. Please see site for details. We have to step aside here, but when we come back, continuing to dole out our thoughts on tonight and wildcard weekend, VSIN's own Will Hill is going to join us next with some of his best bets going into the week.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Tomorrow we'll kick off 6 games. Winner go home in the NFL as wild card weekend is upon us. Thanks for hanging with us on this Football Friday edition of Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you as we welcome in our good buddy Will Hill on the Progressive Guest Line, VSiN host, contributor, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast as well, wherever you get your podcasts. And Will, we've got a lot to get into. First thing I want to hit on, we actually opened our last segment with some news coming out of Chargers camp that looks like their rookie running back, Omarion Hampton, is going to give it a go this weekend against the Patriots. He said that's the plan, is for him to get back out there. So that's at least a feather in the cap for somebody like you who is playing Los Angeles this week.
Yeah, I like the Chargers, and what a weekend we have in front of us. And if last night was any indication of what the rest of the weekend is going to be, what a hell of a weekend this is going to be, because that was tremendous theater last night, and hopefully we get more of it tonight and going forward. But no, I like the Chargers. If you look at the Patriots, we all know about the schedule. That's been beaten to death. But I cited these stats on the Megapod. Stucky from the Action Network talked about it on his podcast and tweeted out, I think. Patriots this year on fumbles recovered 21 of 34. Fourth downs were extremely lucky. I think hit 80%. Meanwhile, their opponents were 10 of 30. Meanwhile, you got a Chargers team with a coach, a quarterback, a defense. Their one Achilles heel, and it's a glaring one, is the offensive line. I think if they had Slater and they had all, to me, they'd be the favorite to come out of the AFC, because the rest of the team is really, really good. I like a little more juice at the skill position, guys, but you can't have everything in the NFL, as we know. But coach, quarterback, a defense, you're getting 3.5. The weather doesn't bother me because it's kind of a hard-nosed team. And like I said, the one Achilles heel is the offensive line. But the Patriots aren't going to really exploit that. Patriots 26th in the league in sacks. And that's for a team that's playing with a lead the whole time. So they don't really get pressure. I think this is – anything over a field goal is a take here with the Chargers. So I like the dog. At some point, Herbert's going to shake this rap that he can't win the big one, 0-2 in the playoffs. He hasn't played well, which I admit. Last year was bad against the Texans. A few years ago against the Jags, they never should have lost that game. They blew that huge lead. But at some point here, these guys usually get off the schneid. Maybe this is the time here for Herbert to get that done against the Patriot team that, let's face it, they've beaten one team that's still alive. So this will be a big step up in competition.
All right, let's talk about Stormy's other favorite team, Carolina Panthers. They get a rematch against the Los Angeles Rams, beat them when they played out in Carolina a few weeks back. Now they are catching 10.5 at home against LA, who doesn't come limping in, beat the Cardinals, but not in great form for Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on a little bit of an island, because a lot of what I heard this week, just listening to Vees and listening to other shows, it's too many points. I can't get to this number. I can get to this number. I don't think it's too many points. Of course, I don't love the idea that there's maybe some rain in the forecast. That throws a little variable in there. But to me, you go back and look at the Panthers winning. Was it Thanksgiving weekend? I think that's good for the Rams. You're not going to catch this team off guard. And usually double-digit favorites in the playoffs actually do pretty well, which makes sense because you have a favorite that's motivated. You don't want to play a favorite that's motivated. You want to play a favorite that is looking ahead to the next week or is hungover from the previous week. The fact that the Rams come in here focused, it's the playoffs. They already lost to this team. And you just dig into that box score, that game log from the first meeting. Stafford throws a pick six. Stafford throws an interception in the red zone. A lot of the production for Carolina came on fourth down stuff. So, really good on third downs. I think this has 34-10, 34-14 written all over it. I don't mind the idea of playing a Rams team total over either, 28.5. I would think the Rams get into the 30s here, but I actually think the Rams are good for covering this number. So I think the Rams win pretty big. I'll say this, early third quarter, we're probably going to be watching college basketball or looking for something else to watch, because that's the one thing about the playoffs, as great as they are. When there's a blowout, there's no other game to watch where, on a regular NFL Sunday, if there's a blowout, no big deal. There's a million other games on. You just flip to something else. You don't get that in the playoffs. But I think, early mid third quarter, we're probably looking elsewhere. Our attention becomes divided. I do think the Rams win pretty comfortably.
Yeah, JVT, I believe you did play that Rams team total over. I contemplated it. I ended up on the full game over 45.5, so I completely understand what you're talking about. And real quickly, just to back up Will's statement on these big favorites having success in this moment, teams favored by at least 9 in the wild card round, 16-1 outright, 14-3 ATS. So there you go there. This isn't one of your bets, Will, but I am just curious. I feel like every round we see a game that is an unexpected blowout. Are there any of these short spread games that you think could get lopsided one way or another?
I guess Jags-Bills, just because you expect a lot of scoring. I could see one of the teams, if Allen can be turnover prone at times, Lawrence can certainly be turnover prone. So that's one. If you start turning it over with a total in the 50s, maybe somebody can pull away. I would worry about your 49ers a little bit, Stormy, just because
okay.
I mean, it's the injuries. Philly's a tough place to play. It's a raucous crowd. Purdy, we've seen him be affected by bad weather before. I don't know that I trust Philly to blow anybody out with their offense, but maybe Philly in that building, their offense comes alive. So those would be the two I'd possibly look at.
And you do like the Jags here in the spot against Buffalo?
I do. I mean, we talked about it. You came on my podcast after the season ended Sunday night, JVT. This is an Allen tax. This is, to me, the wrong team favorite. I think the Jags are slightly better. I know you don't give them much for home field. That's not like a great home field advantage, but you still got to give them something. So I just think the wrong team has the plus sign. Plus, in a close game, the Jags have a kicker that can basically pull up from midfield and, to use an NBA term, hit one from the logo. He can hit from anywhere in a close game. I think that matters. So Jags at 1.5, certainly a great teaser leg. And I do think the wrong team is favored here. So I do like the Jags. I think there's some value there on the 1.5 for Jacksonville.
Here's the real question. Which team has the better Josh Allen right now?
Ooh.
I'm still going to go with the Bills one. I mean, at some point, I think you're similar. I think you're similar, JVT. You root for these narratives to die. I mean, I saw one of the, I think it was a Patriots fan tweeting that, look at the guys Allen's beaten in the playoffs. It's Huntley, and it's downgrading what he's done in the playoffs. A lot of his losses, Allen, are games to Mahomes where his team gives up 30-something points. I mean, a 13-second game wasn't his fault. So I'd like to see Allen win one, but root for my bets first, and I'm not sure that the rest of the team is good enough. But it's a wide-open AFC. We'll see.
I'm worried for him, too. You finally have an opportunity in the postseason where you don't have to go through Mahomes and some of these other quarterbacks, but you still have one of the worst run defenses that's left in the playoffs. So it's a whole thing. That said, you mentioned being worried about my 49ers. You do have a play in that game with the Eagles, but it's on the total, not the side.
Yeah, I like the under. Eagles are just a great under team. They're 30.5 seconds per play, so they play slow. They're almost like a service academy. They don't hit big plays. It's 3-4 yards. It's 1,000 paper cuts at a time. They'll get to 4th and 1. They'll do the tush-push. You know, they can really get to 3rd and 3 to do the tush-push twice. Chances are at home, they're not as likely to get flagged for a false start, so they get a little leeway there. I just think that, raucous crowd, plus winds up to possibly 25 miles an hour. So we've seen Purdy, who I like, I think is a good player, underrated at times, struggle in bad weather where he doesn't have the biggest arm, doesn't have big hands. If it's a raucous Philly crowd, a little wind, I just think Philly plays their style. And to me, this is like a 24-13, maybe 23-17 type of game. I just think Philly takes the air out of the ball, plays good defense, eats a lot of clock, and I do think this stays under the total here at 44.5.
All right, let's talk about the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears. I've got a decision to make on what to do with this Bears ticket. What should I do? I think the Packers are going to win this game. Would you agree?
I would. It's hard not to look at the Bears and just be a little suspicious of this record.
Sure.
And it's baked into the market. They're a home dog in the playoffs, but look at these wins. I mean, they're down by 10 with a couple minutes to go at home against the Giants, and they're down 10 points against the Packers with a couple minutes to go, plus 22 in turnovers. To me, it reminds me as a Viking fan of the Viking team 3 years ago where they lost to the Giants and Daniel Jones in the first round. Eventually, this stuff catches up to you. The Packers, if you believe in the rest theory, they were able to take last week off, get refreshed. Neither of these teams have had a bye since week 5 or week 6, so I think that does matter. And, I mean, these teams played twice in the last 6 weeks or so. Green Bay won the first game, and we're up by 10 with a couple minutes to go in the second game, in a game where Love got knocked out of. So Packers 11th in DVOA, Bears 16th. They've climbed up a little bit. I just think the Bears are the better team here. Bears have been really feasting on turnovers. I don't know how sustainable that is. I will take the Packers here to move on.
Freudian slip. You believe the Packers are the better team. Come on, we got to keep that together now.
Last thing here, what do we do with that Monday game? Texans Steelers 3-point spread with the Steelers dogs at home, lowest total of the weekend at 38.5.
Yeah, I don't know if it's low enough. I think the winner gets the 20 here. You got two coaches who, Tomlin's been a little bit more aggressive lately. I mean, the play before the half last week, which I didn't think was crazy, even though it didn't work, people play the results, but still two pretty conservative coaches with D'Amico Ryans, with Tomlin, not afraid to punt, play field position, not afraid to kick field goals. I just don't know how Rodgers at this age moves the ball against that defense. I don't really trust Stroud, a Houston team outdoors in bad weather, another really good environment in Pittsburgh. To me, this is 19-16, 20-17. I know it's hard to stay under these low totals in the environment of the NFL where field position's better and these kickers can make it from anywhere. But to me, I still think under 38.5, I think there's some meat on the bone to the under. But lead towards the Steelers on the game, just because I don't trust that Texans offense to be laying a field goal on the road. But I will go under here. I think this is an ugly, low-scoring game.
Well, we got to hit the break, but real quickly, did you play anything in the Peach Bowl tonight?
Oregon. I think okay. Film guys talk about Indiana. That defense is really complex. The first time you see it, it's tough. Moore struggled with it the first time. I think it'll be a little more comfortable the second time. I like getting the 3.5. And remember, the first time, Oregon's favored by a touchdown. I know there's some home field in there, but we're talking about 10.5 point adjustment. You take out home field, it's still a good touchdown adjustment. So I think I'm selling high on Indiana here. Hopefully we get another really good game like we did last night.
What a pro. You like hit the times 2 speed, like when you're listening to a podcast, to be able to get all that out before we hit the break. Will Hill, you're amazing. If you guys haven't already, make sure you check out the Shoulda Bet More podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We got to step aside. When we come back, Mike Palm's going to join us in studio. Don't miss it.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Friday edition of Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Very fortunate, as always, on a Friday to have our guy Mike Palm, VP of Operations at this wonderful property, in studio with us live here. What's going on, Mike?
Hello, how are you?
Delightful. And yourself?
Nice. Some football this week, I hear.
Just a little bit.
We got our check ceremony tonight for everyone.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
The big checks come in for the survivors, and three of the Grandissimo are coming to collect this weekend as well, so they'll be there tonight, and our top folks in the Circa Millions. By the way, one Jonathan Goulet is getting two checks, two of his entries tied for 19th tonight. That could that be the Jonathan Goulet we know and love?
Could potentially be.
I would think it is.
Yeah.
I would.
So.
I don't
think
know many
it is.
Of those. Yeah.
Steve Fezzik, who was on with Gil earlier, he tied for 9th. So it'll be a lot of familiar faces in the Galaxy Ballroom tonight.
Cool.
How fun was the? I mean, I know week 18 of the regular season for a lot of people is like, okay, there's not much to play for. But for the scene that you guys had at Circa Sportsbook with all of those survivors, I feel like it looked like a blast.
Yeah. The poor guy that had the Bengals wasn't here, so we didn't have to suffer through him or take his hedge.
Yes.
And then the two Vikings, that was a laydown by the Packers. So, and Jacksonville, after, 15 minutes of maybe a little worry early, was over. Mm-hmm. The poker guys on Atlanta had the sweat, and I was down with them in pod five, kind of living through that with them. But it is always fun. I remember last year we had 18 folks going into the last day, and I think 14 of them were here, and 10 got knocked out with some crazy results on week 18. But it is fun. It is a fun day, and then they go and they all have dinner. I'm not a part of that because that's like a four-hour dinner, but they all go and have the champagne and then head down to dinner at Barry's, so it's a nice tradition.
Yeah, it was cool to watch, and Juicy K in that group. And
I have
all
to abbreviate. There's a necessity to abbreviate. I'm not sure Jeff Benson missed that name. You know, he approves all name. They were nice people, but... nursing student.
Yeah.
She's the lead person.
Right.
A nursing student at UNLV who grew up in Las Vegas. She's the lead person. She had a bunch of other poker players and that were helping her out. That was great. The other one that was on the Vikings, they wanted to remain anonymous, but it's a family. And so there's some really good stories there.
Yep.
Now that we are in the NFL playoffs, any games in particular you liked?
I bet the Packers at pick when it got down to pick. I mean, they've led every second of regulation, basically dominant in the first two halves of those games. I think they have a better defense. The Bears have, in recent years, when they get home playoff games, really felt the pressure. You know, for a team like that, when the city's crazy about it and you get behind in the playoff game, the expectations tend to really weigh on teams. The other game that I'm fascinated by is Jacksonville and Buffalo. Because I've yet to find somebody that likes Buffalo in this game.
That's what I keep saying.
I mean,
We just had Will Hill on last segment. Said he likes the point and a half of the Jags.
The whole world loves the Jags. The VSiN sheet from Bill 80 was it was all Jags.
Yeah.
It's almost forcing me to bet. But every time, if there's eight people on one baseball game, it never wins.
Yep.
This is not just anecdotal. This is true. That when you get everybody on one
spread, Mike. Yeah. I mean, what do you mean?
But the fact that we haven't seen the line move at all, despite everybody talking about the
Jets. Well, because there's a narrative here about Josh Allen. I mean, he's the best quarterback left in the AFC. And if he can't win with no Mahomes, no Burrow, and no Lamar Jackson, I mean, when is it going to be his time? I think Sean McDermott gets fired if they don't win this game.
Sure.
I do. But I also will say this, and I said this about the Notre Dame-Indiana game last year. The winner of that game would go to the national championship game because you were getting Georgia without their quarterback and then you were getting small game James and Penn State. I think the winner of this game goes to the Super Bowl. I believe that. I believe either of these two teams can win in New England or in Denver. We've seen Buffalo do it in New England. We've seen Jacksonville win in Denver. I do believe the winner of this game represents the AFC.
Yeah, and I think, too, some of this is the narrative. I also think it's hard to turn away from Jacksonville. They're like the hottest team coming into this thing.
But statistically, John, there's no weakness there.
Yep.
And but they blew that 19-point lead to Davis Mills.
Yep.
And since then, there's no false steps.
Yes.
Don't point at me.
I point to her because on Live Bet Sunday that day, she may or may not have proclaimed that that game was over.
That's not true.
They said, I'm sick of this. It's 10 points.
He's misconstruing how that one played out. That was when we were having the weren't the Bills simultaneously in another game where they were trying to come back?
Yeah, they were down to the Dolphins that week. Yeah.
So I was saying if I had to pick a team to come back, I would rather take Josh Allen than Davis Mills.
Lo
and behold, what happens?
Said no shot.
Stupid. What are you going to do? Peach Bowl tonight?
Peach Bowl tonight. I said if the number went on the opener was more than 3, I had to take Oregon. And it was 4. And now it's down to 3, and I'm thinking I want to lay 3. Indiana's done nothing wrong. There's nothing to criticize. You have to now analyze, was Oregon's defensive performance against Texas Tech more about their defense, or was the Texas Tech offense just really overrated because their defense was so darn good? And they got so many turnovers. They were in the lead in every game, and they gave them short fields with 3 and outs. So was their offense really any good all year long, or was that just a myth? I don't know. Obviously, Indiana has no fear. They went to Outson, and really, the game was 8. They beat him by more than 8. I mean, he threw a pick 6 in that game. Mm-hmm. They dominated Oregon in that game. You got the revenge factor. I hope Indiana does win by 3, and they go to the national championship, and I can cash my plus 4, because I think Indiana-Miami would be a heck of a game.
Before we move on from football, did you watch the thriller in the FCS championship game?
I did. I watched every second of that tremendous coverage. Mm-hmm. We got murdered in that game.
Really?
There was so much pro money on Illinois State second half.
Oh.
Money line, plus 270, plus 7.5. We got killed. I was sitting here watching the whole thing because I had to do an interview. A Japanese documentary company came in, and I did like an hour interview with them. But they came later, so I came in and watched the game. And I was pulling for Illinois State just because, I mean,
what a story.
And then they look dead in the water, 14-0. They finally get the touchdown. 3 plays, Montana State makes it 21-7.5. They scored 4 consecutive touchdowns. 4 consecutive touchdowns. I hate to criticize Brock's back, but how do you have that kid attempt the longest field goal of his career? And you're still going to give Montana State a minute. That's the reason why. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to give him a minute. You get the first, maybe you can get 10 more yards, and you make that field goal the last play of the game.
I'm just stunned.
But nobody wants to ask about that. Nobody wants to ask Brock's back about why did you have Constantino kick that? We want to talk about the running back's brother's happiest brother scored and the emotion in their eyes.
Fortunately.
Ask the hard questions, ESPN.
Fortunately, I get to interview the winning
side. You were on the other side. In all her Big Sky glory. I mean, she was the biggest big. I thought they're supposed to be impartial. But Disney was all behind Big Sky in that game.
You kidding me? I gave a great Tommy Rittenhouse report at the end of the. It was actually, he's diabetic. And he was shooting himself with insulin before that drive that led to the field goal. Like, crazy. But I just felt so bad for them that you have that field goal blocked. And then
the whole team wanted to go when he sent that field goal. They were all mad. They were coming off. They were incensed. They were screaming, go for it. Yeah. They showed it. The cameras were showing all of it before the field goal. I'm going, what is he doing? Then they block it.
But then they go score in overtime, and the extra point gets blocked again. And it's
should have gone for 2 in overtime.
insane. Last couple minutes here. You did want to bring up what's going on with Linus Olmark and the Ottawa Senators. So if you want to set the table for our folks who might not be familiar.
Well, we can't report any of these things as fact. But what a crazy move by Ottawa to come out and say the reason he took his – the background for people who don't know, Linus Olmark, part of that great season the Boston Bruins had. Ottawa goes out and pays, what, $8.3 million a year to get him. This is the guy that's going to –
$33 million
contract. Not just to the playoff.
Yep.
This is the guy that's going to get him to the Stanley Cup final. They're a decent team. They need a goalie right now with him gone more than Edmonton does. It's brutal watching them play.
They go to the playoffs last year and hope they can build on it this year.
Yeah, and so he mysteriously takes this leave of absence, right? And then the GM comes out with this bold statement. He took a leave of absence for his own reasons, and we're fully supportive of him, and all these online rumors are untrue. Well, all these online rumors are that he had an affair on his wife with another player's girlfriend, and told his wife, hey, everybody's doing it on the road trips. He did it. He did it. He did it. And the wife went and called all the wives and girlfriends and told them all about it. And the team came unglued at him, and they had to get him away from the team. But nobody even really knows that, except that people right. are in the weeds of Canadian hockey until the Ottawa Senators come out and make a statement. Now everyone's, what are the online rumors?
I'll read the statement when we come back from the break, because it is one of those things. And I was kind of giving JVT some background of the drama before we came on. And I was just thinking, no one would have given credence to these online rumors had you not come out and said, this is completely fabricated. And it never, if you don't draw that attention to it, at least publicly, this goes away. But the fact that you acknowledge it, then all of a sudden we're all Googling.
Well, sure, it's now popping up on all the stories now. Everybody's coming out about, well, what's going on with Lena Solmark?
Oh, and it doesn't help that they got rocked yesterday, too.
They were set up. They get that kid they have in there, and then they have Hunter Shepard. He's only played eight games. I mean, this is patchwork.
And they just signed another goalie.
They're out, not last night, but I mean, they totally outplayed Detroit and got beat. They just don't have any goaltending right now.
Is there any recovering from this if those things are true?
No, who wants to play with this guy if it turns out to be true? Would you want to play with him in your locker room?
If you get him out,
this is worse than Robin Leonard.
No, that's true. But how do you get him out when you just paid him all this money? So are they a fade? Are we fading Ottawa?
You can bet the other team total. Other team total every game.
See, we always got to give you a betting angle.
I'll give you one thing, too. The Edmonton Oilers, 20 straight games, the team that scored the first goal won in their games.